have, you know what people have been obsessed about? The White Hot movie.
The documentary, yep.
You were actually worked at Abercrombie & Fitch.
Yeah, you know, I was actually looking forward to this documentary because working at Abercrombie, it was very controversial.
Hello and welcome to the Hustle Over Everything podcast. This is the podcast where we receive stories, tips, and tactics from entrepreneurs who have done it. This week is a wild card episode. That's where we chop it up and then see what's good with each other, you know, talk about trending topics. You know, Owen, my guy, what's good with you, bro? How are you?
The winner.
What's popping?
Yo, look at us.
It's new, a different setup.
New setup.
Yes.
New Shure mics.
Yes.
This is professional
podcast. Not sponsored.
Not sponsored.
Yes.
But this is like, this is symbolic for our growth as a podcasters, as a brand. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Dorks and Canucks in the back, you know, controlling the audio and controlling the video. But April 2020, lockdown,
yeah,
Blue Yetis, everything, and Zoom. Now Zoom. And we used to like, remember we were obsessed with Shure mics?
Yeah, we used to like think of them like their holy grail of
holy
podcasting.
Holy grail podcasting.
Not no more.
Not no more, man.
Now we're here.
Now we're here, 2 years later.
So, bro, you know what people have been obsessed about? The White Hot movie. You know
the
what I'm saying?
The documentary. The documentary, yep.
You were actually worked at Abercrombie & Fitch.
Yeah, you know, I was actually looking forward to this documentary because working at Abercrombie, it was very controversial.
Yeah.
Even the way I was hired was controversial. Like, I was, like, walking around the mall, trying to find a job. I exhausted every single place handing out my resume. I walk into Abercrombie. I speak to the manager. And I'm like, hey, are you hiring? She's just like, yeah, we're hiring. It is what it is. I'm like, do you have your resume on you? I'm like, yeah. And, you know, she looks at it. I had, like, you know, retail experience here and there. It's like, oh, come for a group interview. I go for the group interview. I'm meeting these other people. And the interview was not even, like, our ability about, like, what we've done at work. It was more about, oh, like, what do you do for fun? What kind of music do you listen to?
Really?
Oh, what do you study in school? What do you want to do with your career? It was, like, a very chill, like, kumbaya in a circle, just talking about what we want out of ourselves. And I get a call from her, like, maybe 2 hours later. She's like, I got the job. I got to come for training and everything like that. So I had to buy triple A's. So triple A's are Abercrombie's, like, uniform you've got to wear on the floor. My position was a model. So as a model, I stand on the floor. I greet people, I fold the clothes, and, you know, I'm like, they're just chilling. So working at Abercrombie, I was working at Abercrombie Kids. I wasn't working at Abercrombie and Fitch store. So I like, there's Abercrombie Fitch and then there's Abercrombie Kids. So I was working at Abercrombie Kids and, you know, everything we saw in the documentary was true. Like the hiring practices, the CEO, the level of like, excellence we had to be on in terms of like how the store looks, how everything is, was just to the letter.
I noticed that when I'm walking there as a kid, I noticed that the smell of
it, the cologne,
pristine,
everything. Even like we were selling sex to young kids.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy, you know. So I enjoyed the documentary. I have some thoughts about it.
But I feel like you're the perfect person to talk to as someone that is a man of color.
Yeah.
You know, experiencing Abercrombie firsthand.
Yeah.
Not, and seeing the documentary. What was your thoughts on it? Like, let's dive deep.
As a person of color, like, at this store, I didn't really experience any racism or anything like that.
Okay.
Or anything in particular. But I can understand how some people might have. There's some minorities like who were placed in the back. I was in shape at the time. Like I was like, you know, I've been told I have like the all American look as like
really?
As a black guy, right?
Interesting.
If you think what's that?
Do you think, because you said you're hired as a model, right? And in the documentary, the model I think was the second stage of them after the lawsuit, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Right?
So I started 2014 Which as
is
a model.
After they already had gone through their whirlwind and all their controversy at that time.
Exactly.
So you might not have known it, but at the time you could have been like a top down, we need to make these changes to make it a little bit more inclusive.
There was like a lot more minorities in there. Filipino girls, Chinese, everything you can think about. Everyone was there. So I needed a job because I was living in Liberty Village, man. I'm staying with two other guys. I need to make rent. I need to do whatever. So I took whatever job I could pay. But the hours are so whack. Like, I can be told I'm working today, and it's like a on-call shift. So I'm on standby, bro. So you know what I mean? You know those shifts, right? So you can't even do anything the whole day because you're like just posted, waiting to hear that call 2 hours before if like you're going to be on shift. So I never really made a lot of money. Like, it was good work experience. I made a lot of friends who are working there, and we're still friends till today. But overall, I had a good working experience at Abercrombie. My thoughts on the documentary were very, like, I was pissed at the end of the documentary.
Really? Talk to me.
Because I feel like Abercrombie fell a victim to the mob. Abercrombie as a brand, it stood for something. It stood for cool. It stood for exclusivity. And the thing that made it popular and really rise towards like where it was because they excluded everybody. They wanted skinny people wearing their clothes. They wanted fit, good looking people wearing their clothes. I understood why they did that. And the thing is, you cannot serve everybody. Everybody wants to be served. And I feel like the people who are like, yo, you see Abercrombie's not selling your clothes. Why are you pressing Abercrombie to serve you to like wear, to make sizes for you? Go shop at the Gap. Like, why do you need to like go all the way there and like make a company that chose their way of doing business to mold to you? You don't go to Burberry, you don't go to Gucci and say, hey, can you make this? You don't make affordable purses for us. You don't make affordable watches like Rolex, Audemars. You don't make affordable stuff for that. You don't see the mob going to them. And the mob is like the woke side now, like where it's like all about inclusivity. But as a business, we need businesses that stick to their guns of this is who we are. This is who we're serving. And if we're not a part of it, don't try and press us to serve you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So why do you think that they should have those hiring practices, though? Because like, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the hiring practices, let's start there. Why do you think that they should, you know, not hire black people? Because that's what they're originally doing until they got sued, you know? And throughout all of their creative, they also didn't have any people of color as well. So they were literally saying our people is white people and excluding other races. You think that's okay?
I think if it's your business, your private business, you do whatever you want to do. You know, I don't feel like, because as black people as it is, we already have so much to fight for in society. To go and start pressing companies to like, and you have to remember, Abercrombie's a legacy company, right? It's been there since like the 1950s. It started as a small brand serving like...
That don't mean shit.
I know it doesn't mean shit, but you have to look at the mentality of the company, right? The people who started it, the people, what it stood for. And I kind of gave up that fight of like trying to like mold, trying to like, yo, press all these companies, yo, hire diversity, hire whatever. Like, I know it's all a pump fake at the end of the day. You know, it's all about like, okay, we'll hire you and we'll say we've done our job.
What do you mean by that? Go ahead.
We've done our job. Like, oh yeah, like we stand for diversity, and they hire like, what diversity means to them, it's like people of color. Like, they'll hire like an Indian guy, an Asian person, like a blonde chick, like a white chick with like orange hair, and they'll like do all these things to stand for it's diverse. But for black people, man, this is like an ongoing fight, and it's a fight I realized that we're never going to win. We're never going to win. We're never going to fully win or feel justified ever. we'll get victories, but I think the championship that we want is to eradicate everything and have equality. But as long as like there's legacy money involved, there's old money involved, things will never really be the way we want them to be.
Why not?
Because we are starting a race 100 yards back and they're 100 yards ahead. And however fast we keep running, there's always going to be that gap. So to close that gap, it's going to be way after we're gone. It's going to be your great-great-grandchildren's, like, who are now feeling that level of, like, inclusivity, and they have a fair playing shot. Racism ended. It didn't even end, but a majority of historic events in racism happened less than, like, 90 years ago, right? That is, like, granny, like our grandparents are still alive and they went through it. There's like people who were like, yo, I wasn't even allowed in the bus. I had to drink different fountains. Mm-hmm. I champion people who are fighting this cause, but I realize as a person, I'm like, I'm just gonna go where I'm accepted and where I feel like I'm gonna excel. I know this is in my company and I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do here, and I'm gonna go build my own crib. You know, I think as a community, we can't go in other people's houses and move the furniture. You get me? We have to build our own tables and like let's start building our own community and building our own buildings and like win like that. So when I saw like what they're trying to do with Abercrombie, I'm like, why are we pressing this company that wants to be this way? And I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Like, I know it's racist towards me and I worked there, and it's not, even if I didn't work there, it's just my whole mentality of like the mob wanting everything to discredit things that happened like in the past, and I can't even change it. So that whole part of it was just like, now Abercrombie has lost its image and now it's just like American Eagle. It's like Aeropostale. It's like Banana Republic. Like, who is Abercrombie now?
No, the company has definitely died, and the CEOs have left. It's a whole new management. You know, but they're also putting out racist imagery. They're also putting out things that we're not benefiting people. And we're pushing the narrative forward that black people and people of color were not equal to white people. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So do you feel like those companies deserve to stay rewarded in our marketplace? I don't think so. I think, we naturally gravitated away from it. Mm-hmm. Which is what should happen naturally. And what happened is they started excluding people, and then everyone that got excluded started excluding them. So I'm happy how it played out. But do I think that Abercrombie shouldn't have been touched? I think their racist practices needs to get, you know, examined, because they were doing illegal things. They were not actually firing people correctly. They weren't actually hiring people correctly. Mm-hmm. And that's illegal in our society. Mm-hmm. You know, so that I think is wrong. But, you know, what you're saying in terms of imagery, if they want to have that imagery, then sure. But they were doing a lot of crazy things when it comes to how they were portraying the white male gaze and all that kind of stuff. I thought that was mod.
Like the white male, like the imagery of like the posters and everything?
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with that?
I thought, when did I dig deep into the documentary, what they were doing, I think, was wrong, of how he was, like, molesting men and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's
yeah, that's what up. I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was messed up.
But, like, the imagery of, like, the jacked guy, like, showing abs and everything, and it's just, like, guys having fun. You did not like that imagery?
That was whatever. That was whatever.
You can find that imagery ever. You can go to Armani. You can check out the cologne ads and everything. This guy's just there, like blue eyes, jacked on like a pool in like the Maldives, and like that is like we think he smells this way in this kind of air, you know. So these guys, like the imagery, like of selling sex, they were the most successful company that ever sold sex the way they did. They made it aspirational.
I think Victoria's Secret is probably the most successful.
But
Same shit, though.
Exactly. But to make it feel like, okay, I don't have to really be... Okay, Victoria's Secret is women. But to combine men and women in one brand and sell sex in a cool, fashionable way, Abercrombie did it very well.
Okay. Okay.
So that's my issue with it. My issue is, like, I think... At the end of it, when I was seeing the images of, like the girl-on-girl kissing, the talking about pride, talking about whatever. Like, these are things that we're noticing in society where companies are caving into to doing. Like, I just saw a Fitbit commercial the other day, and it was like, it was such a woke commercial where it's like, okay, you have like this gay couple kissing, they have like this obese woman on a surfboard, like checking her Fitbit and everything, but they don't actually show her getting on the surfboard surfing. So like, they're showing, like, it's like they're trying to make it like very inclusive. And I think like there's a danger in being very extra inclusive because you're really not showing a picture of reality by like showcasing this image. Because
why isn't it reality?
Okay, when have you seen an obese woman like that surfing like that?
I've seen an obese woman like
surfing.
We're in Toronto. Nobody goes surfing here.
But surely though, like that is just like a mod.
So
like if we pull that commercial up right now,
I know,
like,
exactly.
You know the commercial I'm talking about.
What's his name? The guy that I showed you, Marc Ribier is the guy who's voicing it, and it's in the commercial as well. The guy in the robe, you know. And so let's have like a connector. So like a woman working out could be equivalent to woman surfing. So do big girls work out? Yes. So having a big girl work out is very regular. You know, we're in Toronto, so we don't see people surf at all. So I wouldn't see a big girl work out. But if, I mean, big girl surf. But if there was a gym, would I see a big girl in the gym working out? Hell yes. Would she have a Fitbit? Hell yes. It's very regular. So like, big girls can be in the gym working out, and actually it's smart business because America is one of the fattest populations in the world. So if I was to sell someone something to a big population of people, like, why not sell it to fat people who's working out?
But we're promoting obesity.
How's that promoting obesity? It's actually the opposite. It's promoting people working out.
It's not promoting people working out, bro.
How is it not? It's literally called Fitbit.
It's a Fitbit, but the realistic image of like what that, let's say that shot of this obese woman surfing, it's very like we're just trying to mold everyone like and showcase, yo, you can be, it's okay to look like this, this is fashionable, this is healthy, like this is, you can be a large man or woman, it's okay because it's accepting of body positivity.
I disagree, because if it was, she wouldn't be surfing. She'd be at home chilling. If she's going to an activity that's working out, then...
Can we look at this commercial again?
Sure, want to pull it up?
Pull it up.
Breathe.
You feel that?
That's your body, baby.
Now go! Woo! I'm telling you right now, that's how you find joy. It's in the way you groove, in the way you push, in the way you love. It's in yourself. Listen to your body. Feel your power.
Yeah, so they're working out.
But bro, like, you, this is so unlike Fitbit.
Why is it unlike Fitbit?
Fitbit never showed this whole, like, guys kiss. Like, what do them kissing have to do with being fit?
That was extra. I can give you some bail there. So this person, so what I think the thing is how everybody works out, you know? So this is her working out is her going surfing. Him working out is him walking out to his gym. Her working out is at home. So it looks like they were probably, that one's random. The kissing was random.
The kissing is just like, what does that have to do with Fitbit?
The kissing is random as hell.
The wokeness of, like, that's what even Abercrombie's trying to do. Like, they're trying to promote bringing all-inclusive, all marriages, all whatever in one thing. Well, like, this has nothing to do with fashion.
It's the opposite. So what we're seeing is the pendulum swing. We're literally seeing people go from extra exclusivity to extra inclusivity, you know? So we're just seeing everybody try and fit everybody in because it's good for business. If I, instead of excluding everybody, I include everybody, I get everyone's money.
Bruh, tell Gucci and Burberry to lower their prices so we can include everyone.
That's different.
How, bro?
It's because the same one shit. Is a low cost item, but it's appealing to a mentality, versus one is expensive, so it's appealing to another mentality. It's a different mentality that they're appealing to.
But okay, so every store in Yorkville, why don't we go tell them include everybody? Because how about like, how about that? How about we go to the dealerships? If we're going to this pendulum swing of like shifting everybody and including everybody, why not go to like
a sports car?
Sports car, Rolls Royce, be like, yo, come in. We're gonna advertise our cars. We're gonna show commercials. They never advertise their cars. They never, like, how do you know when to buy a Rolls Royce? Do you know a Rolls Royce dealership anywhere nearby? No, you don't. Have you seen a Rolls Royce commercial? No, you haven't. Because it's appealing to a certain class, a certain individual. And that is okay. Abercrombie wanting to appeal to the all-American white man, boy, prom king, prom queen person, that is fine. We need to stop dismantling brands, sticking to what makes them a great brand, to want to feel inclusive of everybody. Like, this whole inclusive...
But here's the thing, bro.
Even brands, Ryerson.
Brands... Hold on. I want to talk about your point, because brands are doing that. Mercedes has an inclusive car, bro. Mercedes has a lower tier car to get more people into Mercedes. There's literally an inclusive car. This is a strategy. People can rent a expensive car too. So people do want to experience that same way. So
I just don't like this inclusive mentality.
What's wrong with being inclusive?
Sometimes I want to be exclusive. Like, I want to be, yo, you cannot eat with me because I make more money than you.
You want to be a mean girl?
I want to be a mean girl. I want to be like at like, yo, like only high rollers here. Only this is a exclusive membership club. Let's like, you know, country club. Yo.
You want to be in a country club? It sounds crazy to hear you say that as a black guy.
No, bro. I want to be as a golfer, I'm going to be at a country club. I am going to fit the bill to like work my way up to like be accepted at a country club. Like, okay, I earn this much. I have this type of business.
So there's a difference there. So one is off merit and one is off just who you are. So I think the difference there is that Abercrombie was literally saying, hey, you're a white guy. Congrats. Here's Abercrombie.
And bruv, that's fine though.
That's racist.
It's racist, but like, it's okay. How's that?
Dox, I see you like about to go crazy. What do you think?
No, Talk. I understand what Owen is saying.
Mm-hmm.
I understand this is not the fight for equality. It's not in the business aspect. We have so many more other fights that we should fight instead of fighting for what business wants to do as a private business. Because this is not how we reach our goal.
Yeah, no.
And it's like constitutional racism fight is more important than fighting brands.
Yeah, than fighting Abercrombie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's my take. Like, that's why I was not even bothered. I was pissed that, like, why are we even bothering, like, what sizes obese people can fit in Abercrombie or not? Mike Jeffries came out and says, I make clothes for skinny people.
Who's Mike Jeffries? Is that the CEO of Abercrombie?
CEO of Abercrombie.
Okay.
And
so what do you think about Tommy Hilfiger saying, after black people were blowing up Tommy Hilfiger, saying, I'll make things for black people?
I don't make things for black people.
Remember that? That was a thing.
I remember that. Hey, you know the thing about me, Al, bro, like, I am a very, like, I think independently, and I think about, like, what can we do as, like, black people to, like, really build our own shit? Like, build our own, like, you know, this is wishful thinking, but we can all go back to Africa, you know, and do what Akon is doing, right? That is a massive land full of opportunity, full of resources, full of, like, everything. We have oil, we have diamonds, we have so much stuff, and we can go build our own, like, magnificent, like nations out there. Mm-hmm. But we're so forced because, like, you know, we got brought to this country on a business trip, as you like to call it.
No, I never said that. Why are you putting that on me? That is not on me.
No,
business trip?
We no, like, slavery, you said it was a business trip.
When did I say that?
When we recorded the George Floyd episode.
No, I was probably mocking somebody who had that in a textbook or something like that. That's what I was saying. Like, I think
to them it's a business trip. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, we could, like, instead of fighting this shit, like, oh, yo, like, we need to get 10% black people up in corporate, or we need to, like, get whatever. I'm like, yo, like, that shit ain't gonna change. Like, they're just gonna hire, like, a chief diversity officer, say we filled up a C-suite person, and kiss goodbye. Like, but they're not gonna bring a CFO who's black.
Oh, my Jesus.
A CMO who's
the
black.
The worst is when they do the hey, we have 25% BIPOC in the C-suite.
BIPOC, and it's just like a gay person.
It's just like one, yeah, or like one. So 25% of BIPOC in the C-suite is like so vague.
Yeah.
Super vague. It could be like one person who's.
And for C-suite is like.
Who's like half
people.
Asian.
Yeah.
In the C-suite.
With like, and say, with like red hair.
Mission accomplished. We're out. You know what I'm saying?
It's like, oh yeah, we have diversity, but we go for diversity of thought. Like, what is that? You know?
I don't know what that is.
So as a community, man, I think, like, we've protested, we've done a bunch of stuff, and it's gotten us nowhere. We have these companies say, yeah, we're going to commit to hiring diverse people. Yeah, like, it never happens in the C-suite. And I think we just have to be at peace with it. We have to stop this.
I'm torn, because at the same time, though, it gives more black people jobs.
Yeah.
And it can give them more opportunity to learn how business operates, and then they can go on their own and launch their own business. Mm. You know, I think a lot of times we don't get enough jobs. We think, hey, I just want to be an entrepreneur and just go out there and fail. You know, because there's a you know, pattern of people to say, I want to be an entrepreneur and going out and just failing without having any experience. So having more people have quotas gives more black people opportunities to go and learn how business is ran so they can go and execute it themselves, which is a good opportunity for our community. But, you know, at the same time, these companies are just leveraging that to be performative and, you know, leverage it to say we're filling this quota so they can look good in a PR standpoint. Mm-hmm. So I have a mixed feelings about that, yeah. You know, because we can win if we think strategically about it. Mm-hmm. It's just how we move about it, you know?
Yeah. So those are my thoughts about White Hot. Like, it's a good doc. I don't like this woke culture. And also, if we have time, we can talk about, like, the Ryerson name change. I want to know.
Sure, yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about TMU, is it?
TMU. Like, what kind of name is that?
Well, first off, why did they change it from Ryerson? What did Ryerson do?
Egerton Ryerson was like one of like the, you know, key pillars, key individuals like setting up the residential school system back in the day.
Oh, shit.
That really, you know, affected indigenous communities. And he was like known for like creating this whole system that segregated and created like a marginalized life for indigenous people. So his statue and everybody now in 2020, 2021, they're like, yo, why are we still riding with this guy for what he stood for as like a person? Mm. And, you know, his thing got brought down. Like, they changed the name. Like, I see why they changed the name. I think it's just like, it affects so many people. It affects us. It affects our certificates. And if we're really going to change it for indigenous communities purposes and for what he stood for, change the name to like at least an indigenous name. Mm. To pay homage to the indigenous community. But to really go back to the wokeness of like, Muhammad Lakmi, the president of Ryerson, says, I think this name sets the precedence for creating an inclusive
Toronto Metropolitan University.
Yeah, that sounds inclusive.
Vague as hell,
bro. Like, it sounds like a fake school on TV on a TV show.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. Anything.
TM Toronto, and like,
what is Metropolitan even? It's a city.
It's a city.
Toronto City School.
Toronto City School.
That sounds like
like, bro. It sounds like a college.
Yeah, it sounds like a college.
It doesn't sound prestige. Like, yeah. Ryerson, like, without even you knowing Ryerson, like, Ryerson has, it's like a brand.
I would definitely have, I agree with you in terms of, like, having a, you know, indigenous name to it. I think that makes more sense. Like, give the power back to the people
yeah.
that it was stolen from, you know? I think that makes more sense. So instead of saying metropolitan, because then it's kind of like honoring them instead of just having it diverse. Mm-hmm. You know, I think just we too often try to go from respecting one culture to try and making it diverse. I remember when I was in high school and there was Black History Month, but instead of Black History Month, they said, hey, let's make it Black Culture Month.
What is Black culture?
No, sorry, not Black culture. Let's make it Culture Month. Not Black culture, Culture Month overall. Yeah. So we're selling everybody's culture this month.
That's so unfair.
It makes no sense. There's no one wins that like that. Mm-hmm. It just kind of diffuses the original sentiment and no one really gets anything out of it.
Yeah.
Nobody's really celebrated with Metropolitan University
at all. It's such a whack name. I saw that pop up. I'm like, so what do we do now? Do we change our certificates now?
Nah. it is what it is. You know, like no one's going to, if someone had a Redskins Super Bowl trophy, they're not changing that. Like it is what it is.
And then you have University of Toronto, like it's just kind of infringing on their brand.
Yeah, word. Yeah. Or University of Toronto Metropolitan University. Yeah.
Part of the same university?
Yeah.
Is this like a Toronto University of Toronto X?
Yeah. It does sound a bit like a diet University of
it's
Toronto.
It's a diet university. What school do you go? I went to Toronto Metropolitan University. It's just like,
mouthful?
I went to Harvard.
No one's going to say whole thing. It's going to say TMU.
Yeah, I went to Yale. Like, look at that prestige. Mm. Like, am I hiring this guy from Toronto? You know what it sounds like? You went to TMU, it's like, it sounds like you just dicked around. Like, you know, it's like a joke university.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, you couldn't get into all these other schools? So, yeah, I went to TMU. Yes.
Yeah, it definitely does.
My goodness, man. I was so vexed. But I'm like, it's funny because all the schools I went to in my life changed their names. Like, my high school was St. Christopher's Catholic Secondary School. But then there's another school in town called St. Patrick's, which was longer. I've been there in the city for longer. Their building was old. And they're not gonna restart it, so they changed our school name to St. Patrick's because it has legacy to it. So St. Chris was now St. Pat's. Now I come to Ryerson, and then we changed the thing to TMU. TMU. Yeah, TMU.
All right. So moving on, you know, we had one of your favorites.
My guy Kevin Samuels, man. My guy, R.I.P. to the Godfather. That guy was a polarizing figure.
Most definitely.
He really wanted to help men and women get better, specifically Black men and women. He wanted to increase more marriages. He wanted to have women be accountable for the things that they don't know they should be accountable for the things that they want to have and have success in relationships. And he was giving advice to these people, men and women. Kevin was someone who was very blunt, very honest, and rubbed people the wrong way in the way he communicated his message. And that particular group is like Black women were like, you know, not about him because, you know, the way he spoke to them. And as Black men, you know, he gave good advice. You know, he was like harsh, but we took it. Mm-hmm. But the thing that bothered me, like, when he died was just how people were celebrating another human's death. And, you know, we can disagree on things. I might not like you. I might see eye to eye with you. But even my worst enemy, I'll never, like, be like, yo, like, you are, see you later, rest in piss. Yeah. You know, that is just very foul. And, you know, especially it's like our women, like our community, it just looks bad because I was telling you earlier, there's an industry that's made of bashing Black men, you know, N-words ain't shit, like, you guys can't get whatever, like, you know, we are shat on every day, bro, and there's talk shows about it, and it's okay, but what Kevin was trying to do, it's to say, yo, even if he said these one, two lines, it's not as worse of, like, historically what's been said about us, you know, but he, at the core of it, was trying to actually get them married and get them in relationships. He just had instances where people came on his show, they didn't see eye to eye, and he spoke to them very harsh. He said certain things, and again, too, context wise, because I watch his lives, those conversations were actually very civil. But then he says, "Oh, you're average at best." When she asked him to rate her, she asked him, and it got, you know, whatever board, was it the board, the shade room? The shade room shade took room. It, mm-hmm. all this stuff, and it just became bad. But you know, rest in peace.
rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace to KS. And it's just bad how like all these women are celebrating another man's death, and like it just doesn't look good, and it's not right as a human. It's just very foul, man.
Let's keep it a buck, though. He definitely was leveraging roasting black women to build up his brand. You know, that's the thing that like. It didn't sit well with me, and I understand why people were like that to him with his death, but I think he maybe had good intentions, but he realized that pushing a specific button was getting him virality, so he kept on doing that over and over and over and over again.
And it's not like he did it every day. It's like he'd have very, you know, he was like, yo, the women is actually where like,
He had buttons, bro.
Yeah, but like, bro, like that's with anything. Like you press buttons and you realize, okay, this is actually what's working.
So here's my thoughts on Kevin Samuels, bro. All
right.
He knew what he was doing. Okay. He realized that, yes, I have good intentions, but if I leverage roasting black women to get there, I'm going to do that. And that's where I think he sacrificed his integrity to get farther. And that's what I personally don't rock with as much when it comes to Kevin Samuels. So I understand. I don't justify it. I already told you. I don't justify people commenting rest in peace or rest in piss, pardon me, on his Twitter or, you know, just celebrating his death. I don't think you should celebrate any man's death personally. But I understand why people are angry at it. And you can understand that too, why people mm-hmm. are angry. You know, because it feels like a black man was leveraging black women to get popular. And that's what I think is wrong.
No, it's not he's leveraging, like, this idea of leveraging black women. It's just like, are black women, like, this group of people who, like, someone cannot make a market for them? Like, we're not saying, okay, yo, we're leveraging black women to, like, be successful. You know what I'm saying? Because all he's doing is creating a talk show, helping them. So is that leveraging, or is that like I'm looking to create more black marriages?
He was roasting them on purpose. So,
what is roasting? Like to give some context on roasting. What is roasting?
Instead of saying, "Hey, you're overweight and you need to lose weight to become to attract more men to you," he'd say, "No, you look like a linebacker and you look tubby as fuck. So you need to go lose weight." He was conscious and pressing specific buttons that he knew were refreshing to people because he was roasting somebody who doesn't usually get roasted online to get virality, point blank, period. And with that, he went viral, but it was at the detriment of the, you know, the media focus on black women.
I'm speaking from someone who watched a majority of the lives, mm-hmm. and I know the instances you're talking about. First and foremost, the whole linebacker thing, Kevin has a routine of every caller who comes in. No matter how pretty you are, no matter how overweight you are, he's like, "Hey, what's your name? How old are you? Where do you live? Dress size? How tall are you?" Right? He wants to get your bio data right then and there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the women, they voluntarily call in the show. Mm-hmm. They want to talk to Kevin. They want to get his advice. So a lot of the people who come in the show and they're talking, they're very boisterous. They're very, like, rude. It's like someone coming on our show, over-talking. I'm like, "Yo, like, you're a guest. Like, let me conduct the show. I'll let you talk. I'll talk. We'll have a very good discussion over the pod." But these women, like, Kevin is trying to talk and like put his, but like, "But Kevin, or whatever, like, hey, listen, listen, listen." So like these things like came out of frustration, and he would say, "But man, I'm sorry, but you're like, you have the size of a linebacker." But he would not say like with so much vitriol, like, "You're like a linebacker," right? And that's the thing. The whole Average at Best video, like, it was, she asked him to rate him. From what I've seen on the shows, Kevin is like harsh with both men and women. But the fact that like he he was made to seem like everything about his show is like just nasty and like whatever, he's a very, like, if you look at all the women who come in and actually have a conversation, he actually wants to help them get what they want out of, like, the relationship and out of their marriages and stuff like that. So pretty much, like, that's the whole aspect of it. So, and there's, like, videos, like, where women were very combative. They didn't want to answer questions or lying to him. Like, they did not actually be accountable to, like, themselves.
So let's play some of his moments and quickly react to it, all right?
No. Oh, damn. Why are you such a poor judge? No, ma'am, I listened to what you said. You came in talking about how you feel like you're in divorce court because you got to leave these men in the dirt. And all I hear is you're a shit judge of character picking men because you don't leave quality men.
You absolutely right. So, God, please stop sending me. That's
No, no, God ain't got nothing to do with it. No, God ain't got nothing to do with it. Please don't bring my God into this.
It's crazy, yo. Like, so, yo, these are the type of women he's dealing with. Like, yo, who? And I've seen these videos. Like, they want to wear bonnets in public. Remember when we went to Atlanta and we see all these girls wearing bonnets at the airport? I'm like, yo, can you represent yourself better?
That's a bonnet. You see, It's like a head wrap can be worn in public. I think that's acceptable. Like that. That looks fun to me. That looks stylish.
That's very attractive to me. Like, yeah. I want my wife wearing that.
Yeah, for sure. Head wraps can go.
Those can go on, man.
Yeah. Going back to where were we? Kevin Samuels. Mm-hmm.
It never starts with him being evil. Like, yeah. People call in, they're disrespecting him, talking over him, like calling. Yeah, like yo, like, hey, I'm talking, like, keep talking, like, ma'am, like, please, like, I'll let you talk when I, you know. So it starts off like him being welcoming, but the girls just kind of take it down south. And the linebacker, back to the comment, was never said in like that tonality, like, you are a linebacker. He's like, but man, like, you, ma'am, I'm like, it's like, you shape like a linebacker, I'm sorry to tell you that, you know. And it, that's how he says it. But Kevin has never lost his cool, like, by insulting someone, like, a name, right? You know, the thing that I didn't like is, like, the sounds how he'd make, like, the different, like, his soundboard.
Yeah, he had, like, a soundboard.
He had a soundboard. He was being extra with that. Yeah, like, exactly. I was just like, bro, like, come on. Like, let's get back to the show. And that's why I can agree with you. Like, he was like, yo, I can make this entertaining. I think from an entertainment value, he was trying to, like, create that effect.
Exactly.
But I think it kind of got out of hand. I'm like, no, stick to what you do best, is having these consultative conversations. And I think to get more viewers, to get more laughs and keep coming back, I can understand why he was doing that, but I think it was just like...
Yeah,
Got lost in the sauce. That's why, particularly for myself, like, as a person who watches shows, I really like the villain. I love the villain. I like the bad guy. I cheer for the bad... Like, I was watching Love is Blind. I liked Shake.
I never watched Love is Blind, but I heard he was, like, super evil to some brown girl.
Some brown girl.
Yeah, what happened?
And he was just saying, like, she makes me feel like I'm with my auntie. Oof. But he didn't say it to her. He was saying it to the guys.
Yeah.
But I was just like, there's nothing wrong with saying that. It's like, we're all thinking that. You know, so I, like, that's my kind of flavor. Like,
was he lying to her though, and like leading around like she was?
He was like honest, like, hey, look, I'm not ready to have sex. He wouldn't say like, you, like, I'm waiting. He would say, I'm waiting for that connection. I'm waiting for that thing. But like, to the guys, like, yo, how you feeling? Like, yo, man, like, I don't know. I'm just trying to get hard, but I can't get hard. I'm just like, she just makes me feel like I'm with my aunt.
Oh,
right. And like, you know, these are talks we would have, but you know what happened? He's just on camera.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it's being on TV.
That's different though, because we're not like talking privately and talking publicly is two different things. So he's conscious that he knows this is going viral. This is going on Netflix.
But bro,
290 million.
The thing I always say,
he's calling her auntie.
We don't know what we don't know, and that show must have been recorded over like a 3 month period.
Bro, I'm not letting you rock.
The 3 month period, and the cameras are on you all the time, so you kind of get lost. Like, yo, like, it's not even there.
Not letting you rock.
No, yes.
Nah, bro.
Yes.
I think all these things are designed.
Yeah, they're scripted.
They're scripted. So,
everything is scripted.
Yeah.
So the producers need a bad guy.
Exactly. So then he made that decision. You know what I'm saying? He made that decision to be that person. That's different from what you're saying. You're saying that he was just being honest.
People want a show.
For sure.
Like, people, and this is like, this is where I come in. I'm like, I want to keep things like, real. You know, like, I don't like coddling.
Mm.
Let's stop the coddling.
Mm-hmm.
Let's actually have a show like where like people say what they feel.
In, I can respect that.
With a proper, like, within boundaries. Like, yo, dog, I don't like the way those glasses make you look, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's like, keep it honest. It's just like, dog, like, what do you, like, yo, you can find a better pair.
Mm-hmm.
See, that discourse, mm-hmm. that is honest. Mm-hmm. It's like, what do you think? Yeah, they're not bad. Yeah. Like,
what's the boundary?
The
Because here's the thing about that is that cold truth will come off as, not just harshness, but it'll come off as like a smack to the face.
Mm.
You know, this being completely truth, it will come off as like, yeah, like a smack. And truth without any type of fluff in the middle will do that to you. You know, unfortunately, that's just the reality. If I say, if I'm walking the street and I'm just like, yo, look at you, you're fat. Like, bro, you need to have couth around you. You need to have a barrier or filter around it. And people who don't have filters, They're the ones who get shut out. Like, comedians get their head cut off. It's the reality.
And it's scary. Like, we go, like, to, like, even comedians being attacked on stage. Because people are easily now getting offended over That's everything. Crazy. You know what I'm saying? So, this offensive, offended culture, man, it's going down a slippery slope where
I agree there.
We're going to lose the artistry of certain things. Like, comedians now can't say certain jokes because of being attacked or being slapped.
This is what happens in history, though. There's a reason why, like, the jesters used to get killed, you know?
Jesters?
The jest, like in, like, old centuries, whatever, like, the jesters would always get killed. Medieval times, you know what I'm saying? Like, in medieval times, the jesters would always get killed. They'd always be funny as hell, make the wrong joke, and they get killed. Is our society, a human still human, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the reality. It's an unfortunate reality.
Yeah.
But that's what happens, is that, you know, you be completely honest and crack jokes, and the jesters get killed.
Yeah, it's
messed up.
It's messed up, man. It's not cool, but it is what it is.
But I don't think comedians should be getting attacked. You know, I don't think Will Smith should have hit Chris Rock. I don't think
Dave Chappelle
should have gotten hit. That was nuts.
You see the guy like being his arm, like, bro, it looked like a cartoon when he gets beat up.
Yeah, that image was hilarious. You know what's funny too is that, like, you could see where his face was down. Cause like one side of his face is still, you can still see his eye.
Yeah.
You can still see like where his head was, must have been down, and his people were just hitting the other side. Crazy.
Bro, he looked pummeled.
Yeah. Most definitely.
So to wrap up on KS, what are your parting words?
You know, all the times your intention can get filtered out by your mechanism of getting there. You know, he had the intention of helping men out. But he got lost in the virality of making fun of these women.
Black women.
Black women specifically. And now his legacy is tainted.
To women.
It is. To everybody. Black men too. Black men are hating on Kevin Samuels too.
They're hating on Kevin Samuels?
Because they know that he made that decision to roast black women to have virality.
But bro, like, I wanna end off, like, as we're wrapping here on this thing, I wanna leave off with, like, you keep saying roast,
mm-hmm.
and as a viewer, I disagree with your angle of he roasted black women. Like, he did not get to 1.5 million views with women voluntarily calling to get roasted.
No, he definitely did. The people go on American Idol every day, but they know what Simon Cowell's about to do.
But he keeps it honest, though. Like, Simon Cowell, like, yo, you're good. Like, whatever.
He'll say you're good, but he'll also say, but you're utterly rubbish.
It's like Ramsey. Like, his candor levels are something that we're all thinking, like, dog, that tasted like shit. But he just says it in a way that's like, we're all thinking it, right? There's levels.
Yeah, they signed up for it. That's one thing that I can completely agree with. They signed up. They went on the show.
They bought in, yeah.
You know, I completely agree there. But I definitely feel that he, like I said, he got lost in the sauce by trying to appeal to the virality of making fun of black women. Because there is a notion to make fun of black women because they get so portrayed as strong. So it's refreshing to see them get made fun of and be the butt of jokes.
So I kind of feel like here your thing, it's just like the fact that it's black women, you have a soft spot for black women.
For sure.
A black man.
For sure.
Right? So
I think we all should. As black men, we should have a soft spot for our women. Yeah.
I completely get that. But I think the level of accountability, the dose of reality he brought to like black issues as a black man who's lived on earth for 50 plus, he's seen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And never have we ever seen a black man speak with that level of candor on issues about black relationships at that, with that bank. Like, think about Kevin dressing in a suit, polished, clean cut, great communicator, speaks very eloquently, and like can dissect subject matters with stats and figures to support his statements. That was like very, like, we haven't seen that before, because the way we see talking about black relationships, it's usually in like a group, people talking over each other, like, yo, like y'all N-words, you do this, you all do that. Like, but him, he comes in, he gives out like this masterclass of a monologue over this is the way black men are doing in life. This is how we can get together. And that was so refreshing to see, because no one had ever, maybe Patrice O'Neal had done that, but Kevin took it to another level. So, yeah, like it just...
it's an unfortunate to see him go.
Yeah, it's just like the accountability he brought to relationships, we needed that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we realized what we just lost.
Yeah, you know, we definitely need more accountability, more transparency in our relationships to help us grow. And he was a person that was a martyr for that. Mm-hmm. So rest in peace to Kevin Samuels.
But he did not roast people. I just want to let you know that. I don't want you to lately, yo, he was just roasting people. That was his show.
It was a part of it. The soundboard is a part
soundboard, of it. Soundboard, okay, I don't agree with that.
It's a part of it.
Okay,
but it's a part of it.
The discourse of his...
He aimed to be transparent when it comes to relationships, to forward black couples, and advance the community. Yep. That was his goal. So he died a martyr in the community. Rest in peace to Kevin Samuels.
Legend.
Most definitely.
You know that song he'll play? It's like you're saying goodbye to like the captain.
Yeah.
This is where we'd cue that song. If you listen to KS, you know what I'm talking about.
I did not listen to Kevin Samuels. I saw was the clips. You know what I'm saying?
That's you. Just go off the clips, man.
I went off the clips, exactly. And then that's why I tried listening to one episode.
Yeah, and this is, you know, you just listening to the clips. It's like...
I gave him a chance, though. I honestly did. And I went back and I saw his past videos and where he was shy and was talking about colognes and stuff like that. You know, I looked back and then I saw the shy guy to the overconfident guy that is speaking now, and I'm like,
overconfident? What's overconfident?
If you see the difference, it's like a super confidence level when it comes to
that's his level of glow up, bruv.
Exactly. So what's a part of his glow up is, you know, his come up as an image consultant, as someone who can talk about relationships and the intricacies of, you know, being a black person, black couple. So mm-hmm. Yeah. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, that's what you can't control. So control your grind and control your life. I'm Alex.
And I'm Owen of Sende.
And that's the show, y'all. Peace.
Peace.